Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, May 20th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Community land trusts are becoming a more common way to create affordable housing by allowing people to own homes, but not the land underneath them. They have a long track record in the lower 48. For the moment, they're a new idea in Sitka. The Sitka Community Development Corporation would like to change that. Board members and volunteers have launched a campaign to build awareness about community land trusts and to explain why they think CLTs are a good fit for Sitka. In part two of our series on the topic, KCAW's Robert Woolsey talks with SCDC volunteer Cleo Brylinski of how someone sets up a community land trust.
It sounds obvious, but without it, your land trust is going nowhere.
You need land, and in order to get land, you can get land either that is donated to the land trust because maybe someone believes in it and donates the land. A community, a municipality, can put land in a land trust.
Brylinski says there are other mechanisms as well. In Juneau, where a CLT owns a dozen properties, several were purchased through a federal program that buys up repossessed homes for conversion to a CLT or other affordability program. As important as the land is a dedicated board. Brylinski is not on the board of the SCDC, but she attends many of their meetings. She feels the commitment is there. The challenge is to create an organization that can endure.
You know, you're talking about developing a place for people to live, and you're going to be part of the land trust involves having a lease with the homeowner. And the lease is a 99-year lease. So you want to set up a framework that supports something that's going to last a long time.
The basic idea in a community land trust is that buyers purchase only their homes. The land under the buildings is held in perpetuity by the trust. In Juneau, those dozen properties in the CLT are sprinkled around town. That's what Brylinski envisions for Sitka.
In my mind, this isn't about creating a low-income housing tract. It's about providing affordable housing to not just low-income people, but even median income. You know, there's a need in this town for median income folks to be able to find affordable housing.
Although Sitkans probably agree on the need, there's been a difference of opinion on the method. There's been some resistance to attempts to control the market. Other people have concerns over creating a costly management organization. Again, this is not what Brylinski anticipates in Sitka.
I don't picture this as being a really big thing, and it certainly would be a slowly developing thing. The only income stream that I hear about that a CLT would have is the small monthly lease fee that is coming in from the properties.
And she says CLTs don't necessarily depress the market values of the neighborhoods where they're located. Value and affordability are treated separately in a community land trust.
The house is still valuable, but you're putting a limit on the amount of appreciation that the homeowner can realize at the time of sale so that the new buyer comes in at a lower price.
But if, over time, a CLT creates a certain number of homes available at below market rates, wouldn't that have an effect on the overall market in Sitka?
I don't think there'd be enough CLT homes to do that. And I don't think they're going to turn over like popcorn. It'll be invisible is what I think. There'll be a certain amount of CLT homes that it has the potential to create homeowners that are prepared to buy those market rate homes because they have something, you know, more to spend.
Brylinski says that a community land trust can't be put together overnight. Acquiring the land and creating a management structure could take 1 or 2 years. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
You can find background information and hear an extended interview with Community Land Trust volunteer Cleo Brylinski at our website, kcaw.org. In part three of this series next week, we'll cover how someone can buy a CLT home and what you can do with it once you own it. A new, smaller Sealaska land selection measure faces opposition from the federal government. The legislation would transfer 3,600 acres of the Tongass National Forest to the Southeast-based Regional Native Corporation. Sealaska's timberlands have been logged for much of their harvestable trees. Officials say the acreage will keep timber operations going. At a congressional hearing Thursday, U.S. Forest Service official Jim Pena objected to a requirement to transfer the land within 60 days of passage.
These two parcels would be conveyed without the carefully negotiated provisions related to special use authorizations and public access that many stakeholders see as essential.
One parcel is on the Cleveland Peninsula between Wrangell and Ketchikan. The other is at Election Creek on Prince of Wales Island. Pena spoke before the House Committee on Indian and Alaska Native Affairs. The bill's author, Alaska Congressman Don Young, chairs that panel. The acreage is also part of a much larger measure that would transfer about 70,000 acres to Sea Alaska. That bill was also before the committee. Young said it's a compromise.
First introduced over 6 years ago, this bill has undergone an extensive vetting process throughout the region and has resulted in meaningful changes such as providing for continued public access to lands and modified certain land selections among them.
The Forest Service's Pena says the larger measure is much improved, but he wants further changes before the administration lends its support. Southeast hunting guide Jimmy Rosenbrook spoke for the Sportsman's Group, opposing the land transfers. He said Sea Alaska's logging will reduce access as well as wildlife numbers.
It's kind of Sea Alaska to offer access for guides to utilize these lands for a 10-year period after their Forest Service permit expires. I don't know if it would be much benefit. Having access to clear-cut areas wouldn't be worth anything. There's no wildlife there. They are D-O-N-E, finished.
Last year's version of Young's bill passed the House, but not the Senate. And the Senate's latest version, sponsored by Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich, has undergone more negotiation and changes. Sea Alaska board member Byron Mallott says that measure is more likely to be the final legislative vehicle, but he prefers the House version.
In my personal judgment, there is more equity and justice in the House bill. But I also know from long, long experience that what the Native community can easily and passionately feel is equity and justice. For others is often very hard to ultimately make possible.
Young's Sea Alaska bill now heads to the full House Resource Committee. If either passes, it will go to the House floor for a full vote. It would most likely be packaged with other legislation. That's what happened last year. The Tongass Futures Roundtable is shutting down. The organization tried to resolve Southeast Alaska's forest issue conflicts. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Tongass Futures Roundtable formed about 7 years ago. Organizers hope to bring together all parties involved in the forest to craft compromises on land use issues such as logging and habitat protection.
The roundtable brought people together who had never had to sit across from each other at a table. The normal environment was a courtroom.
Bruce Botello has been the group's facilitator and moderator. The former Attorney General and Juneau Mayor says roundtable members decided to end their work during a meeting earlier this month.
One of the benefits for us to dissolve right now is to create the opportunity for people to come together and perhaps learn from our experience, but also build on it. And one would hope that any assembly of stakeholders would truly bring back the whole range of participants.
Membership originally included industry, government, tribal, and environmental leaders, but about 2 years ago, the state, timber representatives, and some conservation groups pulled out.
We didn't have enough movement in the direction that we felt needed to occur.
State forester Chris Mache was one of the original roundtable members.
So the governor decided it would be best to put the state energy and time and resources into a task force, which he established through an administrative order.
Mache chaired that task force, which released its final report a few months ago. It recommended a number of actions meant to increase logging. One called for the federal government to turn 2 million acres of the Tongass over to the state to be managed for harvest. Mache says the timber task force has since shut down. Botello says the roundtable will cease operations July 1st, but he says it achieved some of its goals.
We devoted a great deal of time to examining the proposed mental health land exchange between the state and the trust, and ended up endorsing a process which is underway. And I think that, absent the support of the roundtable, would have been more difficult.
He says some of the roundtable's working groups will continue meeting. One focuses on Alaska Native issues, another on sustainable forests. The Tongass Futures Roundtable had about 35 members and tried to reach decisions by consensus. State Forester Mache says that just didn't work.
It was a well-intentioned effort, and a lot of people spent a lot of time in trying to make that process work, and unfortunately it just wasn't the right time and the right place, so it's too bad that it didn't come to a better conclusion.
The roundtable had funding support from the Rasmussen Foundation and other donors, the Juneau Office of the Nature Conservancy, an international conservation organization, staffed the group. Roundtable coordinator Norm Cohen says money was not the reason the group decided to dissolve. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Pavlov volcano continues to erupt on the Alaska Peninsula, about 625 miles southwest of Anchorage. The Alaska Volcano Observatory reports a plume of steam, gas, and ash reached up to 22,000 feet Sunday and was visible on satellite images drifting southeast over the North Pacific. Trace amounts of ash were reported in Sand Point, a city of nearly 1,000 on Popoff Island, about 55 miles east of the volcano. The Volcano Observatory says seismic activity remains elevated at the 8,262-foot volcano that began its latest eruption May 13th. The volcano last erupted in 2007 for 29 days. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And here's a look at Sitka Zone weather. It's currently 38 degrees downtown at the Cable House under fair skies. Today it's going to be sunny with highs around 53, northwest wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight mostly clear, lows around 39. And Tuesday, sunny with highs around 61. Wednesday, sunny, highs around 59. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. Mm-hmm.